Did you call bank? I called game.
Welcome back to Calling Bank. Will, we're at part two of our big NBA week. For those that haven't listened to the previous episode, do it. Because we speak all about Kobe's Memorial Game. We speak all about the Rockets and the Pels and the Bucks, and have some really big interviews with Zion, Antetokounmpo,
Coach Bud.
But this episode, we're going to go all through the Heat versus the Clippers, which was a big game against teams that had only played 10 days prior. We had a chat with Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, of course, the coaches from both teams, and the hot shooter, Landry Shamet.
Oh.
And of course, we spoke to Mike D'Antoni as well, as we covered Lakers versus Houston just the other night. So very big game, some big interviews from key players.
And we got the first interview with Robert Covington.
With Robert Covington post-trade, which was huge. So let's start off with the Clippers versus the Heat. This ended up being a blowout, but it shouldn't have been. It was 128-111 for the Clippers. This was a weird game. So Heat played zone for most of the game, which you don't expect, but it did allow a lot more open threes for the Clippers, and they just weren't falling. Paul George gets three fouls in the space of 6 minutes. So two in the first quarter, he plays a minute in the second quarter, he's out. 6 minutes in the first half.
It's interesting you say, you know, let alone open a lot of open threes,
yeah.
But the interesting thing is they're only up by three, the Heat, at halftime.
Yeah, it's very close.
It's very close. And they've still given up 55 points, despite the fact that the zone defense was their go-to here.
Yeah, and they played a bit of zone last time they played together. And Spoelstra spoke a little bit about how that looks for them. But I think at the end of the day, the Clippers weren't clicking in the first half. It was similar to the Bucks a couple of days prior, where in the first half, things aren't falling. Like, Montrez didn't look great. Lou Williams is kind of fueling the offense. Kawhi can obviously make his shots. But
I mean, PG-13 was on the bench. So
yeah, pretty much the whole time.
Played 6 minutes in that first
and
half.
Landry Shamet's 1 of 7 to start the game. Like, it's not looking good for the Clippers. Meanwhile, like, Bam Adebayo is playing well. Derek Jones Jr. is having the game of his life. He had a career-high 23 points, showing that he's not just a dunker. He can make open shots.
In saying that, I am excited to see that man in the dunk contest.
It's going
to
be him or Pat Connaughton. That's the real question. Dwight Howard, forget about him.
Yeah.
But it should be a really good dunk contest, and we will speak about that in our next episode about All-Star Weekend. But from my perspective, the Heat should have been winning this game, at least in the first half, and they were only winning by three. It's not enough to have like a big enough gap to then overcome what was a crazy third quarter.
Yep.
So in the third quarter, Los Angeles Clippers go for 37 points. They do a 15-point turnaround.
Yep.
They're up by 12 by the end of the half, by the end of the third. The difference? Paul George.
Yeah.
It's just such a difference watching him on the floor. Like, they ended up taking out the one and only Kawhi Leonard, because Paul George was just running the show. He was absolutely fantastic in the third quarter. He was just aggressive, and he managed to limit his fouls. And that was a big thing. He only ended up with four fouls at the end of the game. But, you know, that's the difference. He made threes. Clippers starting to get hot. They make four or five threes. Everyone's hitting from everywhere. They go 13-0 run.
Exactly.
The difference here, Jimmy Butler gets injured. He injures his shoulder. He's out for the game. We didn't get any updates out of the game. But without him in the game, they fall apart a little bit. Which is interesting, because Bam Adebayo, and we spoke to Coach about this as well, he's their backup point guard, essentially.
Yep.
He can run the floor. But defensively, they were lacking it. Paul George gets 11 points, 5 assists in the third. They make 9 threes in the third quarter opposed to 3. And they're up 92-80. And by that point, you knew it was over.
Yep.
Look, I'm not in saying that. Miami begins to claw its way back. It looks like there's a possibility for them to come back. And then Landry Shamet just goes absolutely crazy. 10 straight points by himself.
Yep. I mean, did they win that trade with the 76ers?
Yes. My goodness. He finished the game 6 of 8 from the field. He started off the game 1 and 7, Landry Shamet. And we spoke to him as well about what it means to have that mentality of continually shooting. This game was an interesting game. I think the styles of both teams are very similar.
In the
sense they're both very physical, aggressive. They're hustle teams. But the zone just wasn't working. And I was surprised that Coach kind of stuck with it, because at the end of the day, it didn't work.
Yep.
And I think in the third quarter, when it stopped working, he tried a little bit of one-on-one, but then he went back to zone in the fourth. And it wasn't working.
Yeah.
The Clippers are a very, 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 very good team. They now have Marcus Morris, which we'll speak about in our trade deadline.
They're a strong team. We've said about it all year. Like, ultimately, this is still the best team, in my view, in the NBA.
Kawhi barely played in the fourth, and they still won by 18 points against Miami Heat, who are a really good Eastern Conference team.
Yes.
When they play properly and you have Paul George and Kawhi playing 35, 40 minutes, who can beat them? The Bucks is the only team I can see that Lakers could beat them. No, Lakers can't beat them in the 7-game series. They just don't have enough firepower. And this is something that Coach said as well that we're going to hear a bit later is it's the depth of the team. Yeah. They just added Marcus Morris. You know how deep that makes their team? Because you're changing Mo Harkless for Marcus Morris.
Yep. I mean, I don't know how you stop that team.
No, I have no idea. So we spoke to Eric Spoelstra a little bit about how do you stop that team with... The thing with the Clippers as well, you don't expect them to be a three-point shooting team. And this game, they were. Behind Shamet, it was incredible. So we spoke to him about that and a little bit about players stepping up and the importance of Bam when Jimmy goes out. It's quite funny because he was like, if you watch the Heat, you'd know that he's our point guard. We know this. It's very obvious.
Exactly.
Jimmy and him, they're the point guards. But if you don't watch the Heat, it's like, what the hell is Bam Adebayo, a center, doing
his
point guard?
Yeah.
But it worked perfectly. So let's have a listen to Eric and what he had to say about the game.
Certainly very aware of it, but you're not expecting them to make 24. You're not even expecting them to shoot over 53s. I know we were in the zone, so that's a lot of what was available. We didn't do it great in the second half. Now they made a couple adjustments and spread us out, but we're capable of doing better. It would have required, obviously, more efforts, more scrambling to get them off the line, and we weren't able to do that. But they shot the heck out of it, and that was all throughout their roster. And they made them when they needed to. When they needed to keep us at bay, they made, like I said, two or three in a row. It seemed like at every sequence to keep the distance. He's like the rest of our young guys. They all put in so much time that if you don't watch the Miami Heat for 4, 5, 6 weeks, you're going to see a different bunch of different players, improved players. You're going to see a team that looks different, and that's a credit to them. It's a credit to the work ethic of the guys. Most people haven't watched this. He's been doing that now all year, and he already started that process last year. You know, but that's what we tell our guys all the time. If you win, people will pay attention, and they'll start to write stories about you and things of that nature. Bam and Jimmy are basically our point guards, but that's been going on all year. So when Jimmy went out, you know, Bam just does what he's been doing. It's not like we had to reinvent anything.
Yeah, and then obviously we got access to Doc Rivers as well. And I think Doc's main focus was the depth because, you know, you don't need Paul George to go crazy every game, especially in that first half, as we saw. And when you have Shamet being able to go 7-15, you're doing okay.
Doing very well. So we spoke to him all about that.
We have guys right now on minute restrictions as well. So the fact that we can go 10 and 11 deep, my guess will help us later. Our guys will be fresher. They'll be more ready.
We then had a chat with Paul George about how to overcome the zone. And I spoke to him a little bit about how to stay out of foul trouble as well and what that means.
Yeah. I thought at first we were allowing the zone to make the ball stagnant a little bit. But, you know, we were able to get to the second side and attack them, forcing them to make tough plays on a 2-on-1 on the weak side. So that was the game. We got countless numbers of threes, and that's really what put the game away.
Paul, you had a couple of fouls early in the first half. How did you change your game in the second half to, I guess, be able to stay in the game a bit longer and really make an impact on the game?
I just tried to still be aggressive, but just be under control. It was a tough start, but I just tried to be under control in the second half.
I mean, we also got to speak to Shamet himself.
We did. But before that, we spoke to Kawhi Leonard.
Yes, that's
very
true.
Very important.
That's true.
Kawhi Leonard, not a huge fan of the media. Very, very not a fan. It's as simple as that. But we spoke to him about overcoming the zone, and I spoke to him a little bit about the chemistry between him and Paul George. So let's have a listen to that.
You know, the rain zone last time. Tonight they're running a lot. Took us a while to get to where we wanted to get to, but it'll end up working out for us.
I'm quiet. You and Paul have played a couple more games together. How do you feel like the chemistry is going between you two? And what things do you think needs to be changed moving forward?
I mean, it's good, but it doesn't matter about our chemistry, like just two players. It's all about the whole five being out there. And when subs come in, we know what we're doing. And it's just, like I said before, it's the whole unit. It's just not going to be two players just being on the same page to win games.
And then we got up to Landry
Shamet. You're jumping the gun here. Sorry, many players to speak to.
I just get excited about Shamet.
He was very, very calm, very modest and humble about his big night. He spoke a little bit about like just getting into his rhythm and the shooting mindset he has to have. Because it's interesting, because he could be the next Lou Williams in that way. Sixth man of the year, jacking shooter. He's a better defender than Lou, in fairness.
Well, Lou's 34.
Yeah, exactly. But we spoke to him about that. And then straight after, we spoke to Lou Williams all about the impact of Landry having a big night and having that shooting mentality and knowing, you know, how to jack it up. So that's what we spoke to them about.
I mean, I try to stay as kind of level as possible. I mean, I couldn't throw a rock in the ocean to start the game, but I got to shoot the ball and be a threat. And so that's my mindset. Keep shooting, keep being aggressive. My teammates want me to do the same thing. Although I got great teammates, best teammates in the world, telling me to shoot the ball every time I get it. So, you know, my life's made pretty easy just by that alone. I know that I got their confidence. So, yeah, I mean, just being aggressive, being shot ready, shooting when I get my looks. It's always been that. It's just been a matter of finding our flow, our rhythm, and I think that's what we're kind of stepping into now. Figuring out the best version of our how this group, you know, how we need to play. I think we're just trying to search for it early in the year, which is normal. We're still trying to search for it. I don't think we're perfect yet. We've had a few games still where we've been a little stagnant, but I mean, overall, we're starting to find it, starting to figure it out. We need to play more of that brand of basketball, I think.
Yeah, he was able to capitalize just how they were guarding us. For whatever reason, out of all the firepower that we have on the floor, they allow him to take the majority of the shots, and he's made them pay both games. So it was good for him to barely get across his career high, and hopefully he'll just keep building up. I hope he does. We need him to have kind of that mind state that, you know, the next one is going to be the one, you know, and that's what he brings to the table for this team, being able to space the floor and give us an opportunity to make shots down the stretch. And so hopefully he missed two or three, doesn't lose confidence, he keep going.
Our final game, Harry, of our big NBA week.
Big NBA week, very big.
Very big, ended up with the Lakers v. Houston.
Which was the game I was most excited for, but it turns out it was so much more exciting than we thought.
Absolutely.
Because obviously, trade deadline. Then you also had the All-Star pickings, where LeBron picked AD for first pick, which we'll go into in next episode. But the biggest thing was Robert Covington.
Mm.
His first game in Houston with the official start of the small ball era.
Even though he came off the bench. But still, I'm going to count it for the fact that this guy literally joined the team about yesterday.
Yeah.
Or 2 days ago.
Yeah, so Houston won this game quite convincingly in the end because Lakers just went cold in the final couple of minutes. But what did you like? What did you like from this game?
Look, Houston are going to be a work in progress now because there's not many teams that go from playing a certain style in a certain way to kind of switching that up. I don't think the switch is significant, but defensively, it is going to be different.
Offensively, it's fine because essentially what they do is they stand around the arc, they draw out the players, and then Russ or Harden drive.
Yep.
That's kind of it. That's their play.
Yep.
But on defense, it's switch, switch, switch,
yep,
box out. You had Harden taking the jump with JaVale McGee.
Yep.
You had Eric Gordon boxing out Anthony Davis. Like, it was weird to watch, but somehow it worked. Like, Lakers didn't even win the boards by that much.
Absolutely. And I think that's the key. If they're going to play small ball lineup, teams need to dominate the boards against them. You can't lose, or you can't even be close to the rebounding advantage. Like, the Pill showed you only a couple of games ago, if you win the rebounds against the Rockets, you will win, or you should win. unless if you can limit your turnovers.
Yeah.
So that kind of for me was the key. This game, Houston's depth of wings kind of showed though, because in that first quarter, and even during this game, Harden was not Harden.
No, he was terrible. He was like 13 points. He was like 3 of 10. I mean, it was the Russell Westbrook show for at least most of the game, but...
But again, the depth in terms of, you know, first quarter, Daniel House Jr. goes 8 points, hits 2 threes. The thing that kept the Lakers in front was Anthony Davis, which, as I said to you before the game, I said, Lakers... Yeah, I mean, if they really, what they should do with this lineup is go Davis all the time.
Yeah.
Davis should get 50 points.
But also keep McGee in. And the issue they have is on defense, they can't switch it around, but you don't really need it. I think play more of a zone style defense. If you played how Miami played their defense, I think you actually dismantle this team quite a bit. Because as long as you have like kind of two bigs in the middle, like they've just got to rely on their 3-point shooting, which when it falls, which it did for this game, they were shooting what, 50%, 55 for most of the game from three?
Yeah.
That's a game changer.
Yep.
But it's not always going to fall. Exactly. Harden's obviously going to take more shots. And like, remember when he was like 1 of 12?
I mean, Harden only got 2 points in that first quarter.
Mm.
And Houston was only down 1 at that stage. So it really showed you the impact Russ was having. But Russ in that second and third quarter, that's when that man went off. I mean, he got 8 points in the first 4 minutes of the second quarter. And it looked like the small ball lineup, the way it seems to work is that the bigs of Lakers were kind of getting double teamed.
Mm-hmm.
So like you had Howard, when he went in there, was kind of getting double teamed by Gordon and Tucker.
Mm-hmm.
And that seemed to work because the rebounding side of things, Howard couldn't get his normal stock of rebounds.
Well, Howard and McGee played, what, a combined 15 minutes? Like it was nothing.
Yeah.
I think the issue as well with the Lakers is that... they just weren't utilizing Anthony Davis enough, which is surprising because he was the main go-to guy. But I think also LeBron wasn't aggressive enough.
No.
We saw, again, a very passive LeBron. He had 10 assists in the first half, 15 assists in the game, like 14 points or something like that. He didn't look as dangerous as he normally did, and he should be exploiting a small ball lineup.
Absolutely.
But
I mean, there were a couple of times where Austin Rivers switches onto him and he passes it out.
Yeah, which I didn't understand.
Which I didn't understand. The thing for me that kind of killed the Lakers to some extent, and it even happened in as early as the third quarter. PJ Tucker gets his fourth foul. He's playing center here.
Yeah.
Basically trying to guard McGee or Davis when Davis went into a small ball center kind of lineup. He picks up his fourth in the third. Like, with 22 minutes left in the game, their backup center, or their center, as Tucker or Covington, have four fouls.
Both of them, yeah.
Both of them by the end of the third have four fouls. Neither of them foul out.
There was not enough driving because it was predominantly like, let's get it in, at the top of the key, let's lob it into a tall big, and they had three turnovers from that.
Yes.
Lobs going over, lobs hitting the backboard, whatever it may be. It didn't work. It really should be like similar to Houston, spread it out and drive. You don't have anyone in the middle, then you have AD rolling to the ring, he dunks it. Yep. Fine.
So, again, it's interesting because we look about the Blazers and we looked at this game. The interesting thing is when Anthony Davis goes off, Lakers would normally, you'd think, would win. But unless you have another star on the other team, Rozo goes off. So, in the third quarter, Davis ends up with 13 points.
You mean goes off in points, not goes points. Off to the bench.
No, goes off
just to clarify
points.
For those listening at home.
Westbrook in that third quarter goes for 16 points.
Mm-hmm.
Davis goes for 13 points. That's what keeps Rockets in it. They're shooting 54% at three-quarter time, and that's why they're up by four.
Yeah.
The fourth quarter... Lakers start to look better. They go up.
Can I just say, I was really impressed by Danny Green and Avery Bradley. It was a very balanced offense besides Anthony Davis, who went very, very well in the sense that they were hitting their threes. They were playing really good on defense. The guards were very impressive because their role against Houston is going to be huge.
Yep.
Obviously, this could be a second round matchup. It could be a arguably first round matchup. Matchup if they're 2 vs 3. But I really think that the two guards from the Lakers did a great job.
Absolutely. Interesting enough, though, Lakers in that fourth go on 11-0 run, end up taking the lead by 2. And then it kind of all falls apart and they go cold. And
so cold.
It kind of that run, interesting enough, coincided with Westbrook leaving and Harden coming into the game.
Yeah.
That's when the run gets sparked. But then Gordon hits a 3. Then Covington has a huge block on Davis. And then
Covington also hits another 3.
Covington hits a 3 over Anthony Davis in the corner, and that ends the game.
Can I just say, and we spoke to Covington after the game, I love his fit with them. I think their small ball only works now with Covington because he is so dominating on defense. He's fantastic. He's why everyone wanted to give up everything for him. I don't watch him that closely. He's not a very exciting player, but his defense...
Great defense.
I want to watch him every single game. because his defense, the way that he runs it, and he's impactful on offense as well. He can shoot the three. He can drive if need be, but his defense, incredible. Just ripping the ball away from Davis, the blocks, the steals. It was great.
Now, again, I think a lot of people are going to say, maybe this is it. Maybe the Rockets have finally done it. Like, they've broken the NBA, that people are going to go away from the bigs. I think people have been slowly going away from the bigs anyway.
Yeah.
But the thing is, for me, Lakers, if you get them in a seven-game mashup, Houston won this game. Could I see Houston winning 4 out of 7 against the Lakers?
Because if they go 30% from three or 35, which is what most teams do,
they're done.
That's at least, that's the difference in the game.
Yep. Three-point shooting.
Look, I think Lakers should have won that game. It's an interesting start to the small ball era for Houston. But I'm excited to see where it goes from here. And we'll speak a bit more about the Covington trade in our trade deadline special, which will be coming out in a couple of days. But we did have a chat this game to Mike D'Antoni and his thoughts all about how the small ball worked, Russ in the paint, and Covington. And you asked him, of course, if Covington's going to be in the starting five.
Which I think is an interesting question.
And he definitely should be.
Yeah.
Well, obviously good. I mean, we're happy about it. I think we can get a lot better. There's a lot of things that we have to improve on, but it was good. I mean, a lot of guys contribute, a lot of, you know, obviously Covington, big-time player, so it's good stuff. Yeah, you know, as a coach, you get scared to try something different, but, you know, I thought it would work. I don't know why it wouldn't, and they proved it did. And now, but I'm, you know, I can have no confidence kind of and change anything. They're the ones who got to do it, so I'm more concerned about them. Yeah, I mean, you know, and I don't even, he obviously his finals were good. He can play better. I mean, you know, a couple of times he just kind of lost the ball. I don't think he was super happy with his game, but, you know, and that's saying something. But we can do better. But a lot of good stuff, especially down the stretch. I thought our defense was good. It kept getting better. And we just got to keep working at it. Well, he did a lot of things. I mean, obviously the big shot in the corner over Davis was incredible. Had a block shot and just his length. And, you know, he's our big man, so that's good.
Coach, in the long term, is Covington looking to be in the starting five? Or
who?
Covington?
Made a big case for it, didn't he? Yeah, he probably will be. Yeah.
I mean, really, as we mentioned before at the start in part one, getting that interview with Covington post-trade deadline was, you know, great to get. One of the first interviews with him. So, I mean, I asked him a question about how he fits on small ball and, like, what his thoughts were on the trade as well.
Yeah.
And how he feels as though what his role will be stepping into this team.
It says a lot, you know, just being able to come in and, you know, be a major impact. You know, just shows that, you know, my team, my coaching believe in me. So, you know, for me to come in and play how I played, you know, my teammates just, you know, put me in the right position. And, you know, I just did what I was told to do. So, you know, just, you know, getting the feel for it and us coming out with a win, you know, that first time, I feel good. I mean, we got to keep going with it. You know, tonight was a, you know, first sign of it, you know, me being, you know, in that role. But, you know, overall, it can be very well. It can be very good because, like I said, you know, you space the floor and they put a lot of guys in, you know, different positions, and it takes a lot of guys that, you know, are big men that protect the rim, and it takes me away from that. So it just puts in a lot of scramble situations. That's not a lot of bigs that aren't used to it. So, and then I used to guard guys on the perimeter too as well. So, you know, that's a big advantage to us. You know, we just got to keep being better at it.
We then spoke to the Lakers. JaVale McGee was an interesting guy to chat to about it, because obviously as a big playing against a small ball, how he thought of the mismatch and his thoughts on small ball, and this is what he had to say.
I don't want to say it was a mismatch. I don't like that word. They just had a lot of shooters out there, so they spread the floor. They stopped us from offensive rebounding, which is something we're pretty good at. And when you do that, it speeds up our game on the defense and gets them in transition. And I feel like they slow down our transition also. That's a total different commitment to it. Just being small the whole time. Yeah, it's different.
How long does it take to adjust to that when you're actually playing against it for the first time?
It doesn't take long to really adjust to it. We knew what they were going to do. We know what their roster is, so we scouted it. It was just, they just hit shots that they usually hit. They hit some contested shots. Russ had a good game getting to the rim. And they had a good game plan.
I mean, interesting thoughts from JaVale.
And then we had Kuzma as well speaking about the issues with the Lakers offense. It wasn't free-flowing, and he had a lot to say about that. And a little bit about the confidence felt by the front office about this roster and making it the whole way.
Yep.
It just took us out of there, out of what we tried to do.
You know, we were stagnant the entire game offensively. Necessarily didn't know what we were kind of doing. So, you know, they did a hell of a job with their game plan and, you know, which got me better. Ball movement, that's the biggest thing. Every time you're stagnant, you know, it's tough. So, ball movement. I mean, obviously, we're, you know, number one in the West. So, you know, obviously our wins, you know, dictate that. You know, we have a pretty good team, but we just have some areas that we need to address. So, yeah, everyone does.
And finally, we spoke to James Harden about, you know, the small ball lineup and rebounding and the importance of being able to box out in these tight games. And this is what he had to say.
It's a good win for us. Obviously, you know, adding Rob and just trying a small lineup, you know, it was good for us. I think defensively we played pretty well. We can obviously be better. We made a lot of mistakes that we can correct, but, you know, that's a part of the growing process.
How do you stay close in the rebounding battle against a bigger team?
With guys that are, you know, much taller than you, you can't obviously jump with them. You have to use your body and use your fundamentals and kind of create space, and it has to be a team rebounding. You know, we don't have one great individual rebounder, so we have to do it as a team, and I think tonight we did that.
So that was it. That was our week in the NBA. It's been a huge week, a lot of big games, and Colin Banks not going anyway. In a couple of days, we've got our trade deadline and All-Star preview episode, so make sure to check out for that. Make sure to like and subscribe. It's really important. Write us a review as well. And continue to check out the Calling Bank podcast, because we'll be back with more things. Mm. We're probably not going to have LeBron in the next episode.
I mean, you can only get him, you know, Christmas only comes once a year, Harry.
No, but we do have some thoughts from the NBA players on the trade deadline. We've got thoughts from Lou Will. We've got thoughts from Kuzma and, of course, Covington on his own trade.
Yes.
So make sure to check that out on our next trade deadline special. But guys, thanks so much for joining us. We hope that you felt like you were in the US with us at the games courtside. But for now, that is the end of a big episode, big part two episode of Calling Bank.
Thanks, guys.
Did you call Bank?